Breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY and Billy Penn, this is your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. My name is Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus. And with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
Well, the 76ers of Philadelphia have blessed us with an even earlier playoff exit than usual.
I'm sorry, I've never heard of them.
The dried-out, glassy-eyed husks shuffling across the street from the Wells Fargo Center. Liz, do you have a message for them?
I don't know why you were there. We don't have a basketball team last time I checked. That was painful last night. My message is throw yourselves into the Phillies. It is all there's left. It is all there is until, I mean, training camp for the Eagles starts in June. It's like a month away-ish. Actually, I don't think it starts till the end of June. So, you know what? All you've got is the Phillies. So, you know, those of us who are diehard fans, as you might be of the Sixers, are here with open arms to welcome you into your latest sickness.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. Do you feel like the Phillies have the juice to be the only game in town for a city that's in the emotionally raw state that it currently is?
We'll find out because they don't really have a choice. They are the only game in town until the WNBA gets its head out of its butt and puts a WNBA franchise in Philadelphia.
Knicks fans wanted to believe that eliminating the Sixers at home would devastate people, but as Pat Gallen of CBS pointed out, this city recently lost three championships in less than 100 days. A first-round playoff exit barely registers among the top five big-time Philly sports letdowns in the last calendar year. Liz, would you call this a golden age of heartbreak in the city of Philadelphia?
I guess I kind of would, because it's golden age is a good way to put it, because it is heartbreak, but it's backed up by a lot of good sports. You know, there's a lot of good sports around it. It's sad when we don't get what we want and then, you know, the championship. But, you know, there's a lot of good sports that go behind it. That's hard to see right now for a lot of people. And I get that. But
yes. Good sports is what I was thinking as Tobias Harris was checing into the game last night.
Or get out.
Good. Good, comma, sports. Good.
And that guy could not get out of here fast enough.
Sometimes the shots just don't go in, just like last night. And most
nights. Or sometimes he just doesn't make them. He just doesn't even try. 0-for-2, man.
Well, as Liz was saying, come on in, Sixers fans. I hope you like starting pitching debates and frequent calls to fire the manager. It may sound like things aren't going well for the Phillies, but, you know, actually they were the first team to 20 wins this year. They got off to their hottest April start since 2011, the year they set the franchise record for wins with 102, and they currently have the highest win total in baseball with 21 wins. Ranger Suarez is your National League Pitcher of the Month for April. He's the Phillies' number three starter. He went 5-0 with a 1.32 ERA and a 0.63 whip. You may not know what that is. That's okay. No one does. Despite all this, the Phillies are still in second place because the bane of humanity, mathematics, stands between them and the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. But that's generally the vibe around the Phillies right now. Nick Castellanos finally hit a home run. Brandon Marsh and Alec Boehm are best friends. The Phillies have the best and deepest rotation in baseball. They haven't lost a series. And when was the last series they lost? They swept the Padres. They split with the Reds. They obviously just beat...
Might have been first series of the season. That can't be right.
The second they also lost.
Oh, yeah,
the
second. So. Okay.
I mean, yeah, just really, really good vibes around the state. Everybody's just sort of ignoring that Bryce Harper's hitting .233 with six homers and half of them were in a single game. And also, according to CBS3, that alligator the Phillies wouldn't let into their stadium has gone missing. Did you hear about that?
No.
It's kind of a bummer.
Just keeping up with all the important news. Wow.
According to CBS Sports, a Pennsylvania man is looking for his emotional support alligator, better known as Wally, after the pet went missing during a vacation in Georgia. Wally went viral last year when he was denied entry into a Philadelphia Phillies game at Citizens Bank Park. If you'll recall that, Liz, that was a simple matter of the Phillies saying, yeah, you can't bring an alligator in here. He's not one of the animals that qualifies for
as an emotional support. Yeah, this is a not for this, a real program. You can't just, you know, buy a little bandana from Amazon that says emotional support or whatever. Yeah, there's like a thing.
But I do, yeah, I am extending sympathies here. This is someone's pet, and it was apparently stolen from an outdoor enclosure on April 21st. So he was hoping Wally is recovered from the scum of the earth who would steal an animal out of someone's yard.
Fair enough, but this man also took this, I mean, I don't know where he lives permanently, but is it in Philadelphia or is he vacationing in Georgia and brought the animal all the way down there?
They were on vacation, according to the report.
Okay, so he brought the animal all the way down there. It's a long way to bring an alligator.
I mean, if it's an emotional support animal, it's probably going to come with you everywhere.
I guess that's fair.
Trying to get them into a baseball stadium that, you know, for which he was not allowed. But yeah, he's just here's hoping Wally is refound and returned to his owner. An update on that story. The Phillies, you know, they had to wear that one. They would let an alligator into their stadium. I mean,
waiting with bated breath for the next very important update.
Well, here's the main topic Sixers fans can look forward to discussing over the next couple days. That's what always makes me feel better after a disappointing playoff loss is some nice discussions about the slowest sport in the city. Mm. I hope you weren't ready to say goodbye to Spencer Turnbull just yet, Elizabeth. Yes, it was presumed as Taiwan Walker returned that Turnbull would go to the bullpen. And yes, Turnbull has looked so good for the Phillies thus far this season that the move became a topic of debate. And yes, we know Zach Wheeler, and I would guess some other starters, would prefer not to use a six-man rotation. And yes, the Phillies did use a six-man rotation in this last cycle that got Wheeler and Nola an extra day of rest. And yes, Turnbull has not officially, formally signed any paperwork that would station him in the bullpen, but here we are weeks later and Turnbull's still not out there. And according to the Phillies, who knows what's going to happen next. According to Corey Seidman of NBC Sports Philly, Phillies manager Rob Thompson told reporters that his starter for next Tuesday is still TBA, explaining, "We could go to a six-man, but I'm sure in the next couple of days, probably Friday, we'll make an announcement." So a six-man rotation, Liz, I know the Phillies have employed one or at least attempted to employ one before. Other teams have obviously done so. The benefits of having six men in your rotation, which is typically made up of five starters, obviously the approach to what is a starter and who is starting has evolved over the years. And current times have seen the advent of the opener, which is a guy who comes in and pitches maybe one or two innings before a pitcher comes in for a longer appearance. They're always messing with this kind of stuff. Things go in and out of style, but a six-man rotation is just, in most basic terms, adding another pitcher to your starting rotation, which typically has five guys in it. It softens the workload on top of the rotation, keeps everybody healthier, presumably for a postseason run, which is, you know, obviously months and months away. It's a long season, a lot of wear and tear on the arms. Having a sixth one in there that you can presumably rely on is going to ease that pressure on everyone's arms and presumably keep everyone healthier. It's extra rest for every starter, which is important when you have guys on innings limits for the season. I don't think the Phillies, do they formally have any guys on pitching limits for the season? I don't think so.
I think Turnbull probably is on something, which is one of the reasons that was discussed moving him to the bullpen, because he has not pitched a lot, you know, too much in one season.
Correct. He has not thrown more than 56 and two-thirds innings since 2019.
Oh, my God. That is very small.
Yeah, it's a very small amount of pitching season to season. So giving him a full season worth of starts seems like it could be damaging to him.
Which a little bit.
Kind of coincidental because we're talking about a six-man rotation making it easier on everyone, but him making more starts would not necessarily be easier on him. Again, this is not something that you could potentially, no one is saying, oh, and then this will be the plan moving forward entirely as a six-man rotation for the Phillies. But for now, things just seem to be up in the air. Other benefits of the six-man rotation, you could see higher pitch counts per start from individual pitchers because of the extra cushioning in their recovery time. So maybe you see Wheeler throw 120, 130 pitches if things are going all right. Of course, in his last two starts, Zach Wheeler has been landing in a lot of deep counts and throwing a lot more pitches, so a six-man rotation could potentially help with that as well. Maybe he gets an extra inning of work despite a high pitch count during a start, knowing he will get that extra rest. And because of, you know, everything kind of goes around that extra rest with a six-man rotation, all the benefits kind of come out of that. And the other one is a lower amount of injury risk because, you know, again, guys are healing more between starts. So, Liz, is a six-man rotation the right move for the Phillies? I mean, we could look at the opposite of benefits that a six-man rotation can have, things like throwing guys out of their routine, throwing off their rhythm. You know, we have seen before that Zach Wheeler doesn't particularly, you know, he hasn't been particularly fond of a six-man rotation. Do you have any concerns about upsetting the rhythm or the schedules of the guys at the top of the rotation, or putting too much stress on Turnbull's arm too soon when he hasn't thrown, like we said, more than 57 innings since 2019 in a season?
I think that's definitely concerning about Turnbull. That's worrisome. I think the guys at the top of the rotation are big boys and can handle whatever the team decides to do. The main worry I have is that when everyone throws fewer innings, that doesn't mean there are fewer innings to throw. It just means someone else is picking up those innings. And so you sort of have to think of the cost benefit in that way, because eventually Turnbull's going to turn a corner and there are going to be innings that he's pitching that could have been pitched theoretically by Zach Wheeler, Ranger Suarez, Aaron Nola, Taijuan Walker, sure. So, like, that's one of my big concerns, is that I just want to make sure that they're not doing it just to do it. I don't think they are right now, but I'm concerned they'll keep doing it just to do it, because they really want to make sure, because I think judging by how much time they've gotten off in the first month, they believe that, it seems to me that the Phillies believe that their late season issues or playoff issues are based on tiredness and rest. Does that make sense?
Would you say that wasn't the case? I mean, well, that no, is an issue I'm this not, team has run into.
Exactly. I'm not saying that's not the case. And I think it's good that they're doing that. But I'm also just, I want to make sure they're nimble. That's something I'm concerned about, is that I want them to be nimble and not too devoted to their mission. Like, we must get everyone rest. Like, yes, but you also, let's make sure that we're not tossing people out there that don't need to be out there. Let's make sure we're winning the games we need to win. Because we had this right now, the Phillies have a chance. It's been a long time since they've been this close to the Braves this late in the season.
So, coming into this season, what were the general impressions of each member of this rotation? Obviously, you got Zach Wheeler, number one, he's an ace. Aaron Nola, viewed as a secondary ace. Obviously, we know everything that comes attached with him and all of his baggage, but end of the day, the Phillies saw fit to give him a pretty big extension, so clearly they view him that way. That's your top of the rotation. Ranger Suarez, a guy who had his season shortened by injury last year but showed a ton of promise, and obviously, like we just said, that's your National League Pitcher of the Month. Obviously, he is showing a ton to the Phillies. Your top three starters in this rotation are absolutely a huge strong point. A lot of teams don't even have one guy that can do what three guys on the Phillies can do. Then you have Christopher Sanchez slotted in as your number five before Taijuan Walker missed a bunch of time due to injury and had to rehab. Christopher Sanchez also showed a ton of promise last year as far as a back of the rotation guy, was able to get a lot more outs with his changeup last year. That has not been working as well in his last couple starts, but he has still been a perfectly serviceable back of the rotation starter for the Phillies. The offense has to pick up some of the slack there, and there are times when they haven't, even though they have been hitting the ball more lately. Taijuan Walker was, I think, the biggest question mark coming into this season. I mean, you can count Spencer Turnbull as that too, but he was a new acquisition. He was a guy that It seemed like Dombrowski went out and got because he saw a potential for a inexpensive role-playing, long relief, spot start guy. You know, let's see what happens in spring training, and we'll see what we have in this guy. And they kind of learned, oh, this guy has what we, I think, want to have from the guy we have filling this role. So Turnbull gets an opportunity pretty quick because Walker gets hurt. And he makes an impression in his first like 2-3 starts where it's like, boy, this guy is really pitching like he wants to stay in the rotation. So then Walker comes back and he winds up being this question mark, I think, to people where he has struggled. Rob Thompson, he famously was left off a postseason roster, had some grumbling about that to do. And, you know, at the end of the day, he is probably the pitcher who people have seen struggle the most. Obviously, Nola probably pops into people's heads there too, but that's a different situation. Aaron Nola and his struggles just exist in a different bubble to me. But Walker, as far as like being a starter coming in, you know, it wasn't like he was a guaranteed disaster, but obviously he gives up a lot of hard contact and that has gotten him in some trouble in the past. So I think coming into this season, the outlook for Walker was where you couldn't be sure. Whereas once the season started and once we went through the rotation a couple of times, we have a pretty good idea of what all of these guys are going to be able to give you. Now, it's a long season. Yeah. Things get wobbly. You know, guys, there's wear and tear. Bad hops happen. Bad nights happen. Bad weeks happen. You know, you're obviously not able to say this is what this guy does and he's always going to do that. But as far as having a general impression of what your rotation can do, the Phillies have that, Walker being that one outlier. And that's, I think, where we're at now. Walker has only really just still pretty recently returned from his rehab assignments. And the Phillies were always going to see, what do we have in this guy once he came back? Like, is that fastball topping out at 90 miles an hour? Is he letting batters barrel up on the ball too much? Is he getting calls on the edge of the zone? You know, what's going on? What do we actually have in Taijuan Walker? And that was going to go into the decision of what to do with Spencer Turnbull. But Turnbull's just made this a harder decision than I think a lot of people anticipated. He has just been not just good, but he's looked utterly dominant at times. I mean, he gave up that like one solo shot in a game, came into the dugout and threw an absolute hissy fit.
Oh yeah.
I mean that in a good
okay,
way,
man.
Like, yeah, like, all right. Whew. I think there was like two guys, I forget who it was like Sosa and Stubbs just having a casual conversation and Spencer Turnbull walked into frame and just started slamming his glove down on the bench. And you're like, okay.
Sort of sliding away very casually.
Yeah. I mean, you like seeing that fire. So, you know, again, this is as far as quote unquote problems go, this is a good problem to have. But
yeah,
it really does just come down to Walker and Turnbull right now. And Walker, you're still figuring out like, okay, like are we seeing the frayed wires? Like, I didn't like that first start. I know you thought it went pretty well, relatively. I feel like walked out of that first start with a little more concerns.
Pretty well is, I think, an over. I think it went all right. I don't think it was amazing, but I think he showed a lot of what we needed him to show.
I just mean, as far as making this decision goes, I don't think this is why you're not going to get a decision out of the Phillies until today, because there was still more to learn. And I don't think they have a long-term plan here. I think the idea of a six-man rotation was like, yeah, maybe if things work out in that direction. Well, things have kind of worked out in that direction. And they are thinking about rest right now for later in the season, because I think they do think that plays into part of their failures in the postseason in the past. So they're already thinking ahead, which I like that they're like, yeah, no, the playoffs are quote unquote given, you know, like we know we can do that. And that is our goal. And we are set up to do that. So let's plan ahead for that. Let's plan for success.
It's a transition. We've now transitioned from, my God, we have to make the playoffs, to, all right, we're pretty sure we're going to make the playoffs if we keep doing what we know what we can do. Now we have to figure out how to maximize the extra stuff that other teams can't do. Or, you know, in the playoffs, every team has a level of competence. It's all the extras that you bring.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, let's not skip over the fact that the Phillies offense really let them down at the end of the last postseason run too. So
oh, yeah.
not, Not sure how you fix that, but that's just not what we're talking about right now, because I don't want to have to talk about it. I think about it too often as it is. But that being said, in the Inquirer, Scott Lauber wrote that while Thompson mostly played coy about the next turn through the rotation, he dropped a hint about the plans for Turnbull, noting that it makes some sense to use him as a piggyback with another starter, likely Sanchez. He could also piggyback Turnbull with Walker. That last part was just me talking, not quoting from the story. So before we get into the numbers, Liz, how do you view this as an alternative plan to the six-man rotation concept where somebody like Sanchez comes out, maybe gets in trouble, or maybe just throws four or five innings, and then Turnbull comes in to ideally finish the start, and maybe the same deal with Walker? I don't know. Does that have more appeal, less appeal? Does that interest you as far as a plan for this rotation?
I think it's good that they are considering that. That's what I want, because I think that's a good way to minimize some of the damage that a six-man rotation could do. You know, it allows them to stay, you know, as I said, it allows them to stay nimble and respond to the situation that's happening right now. Like, when the Phillies get into planning mode instead of survival mode, that's when I get worried. And I think because we've seen over time, if they plan for the future doesn't necessarily come true and they have to go back into survival mode. I think it's a really good way to help the top of the rotation stay in routine. Well, also, you know, who is good right now? Who is bad? Who has good numbers against who's starting? You know, if you've got three guys who can make their start in the next, you know, who can make their starts in the next 2 days, you can mix and match how you want. And that's kind of great. That's exactly what you hope that a good manager has the opportunity to do. I feel like a lot of managers want the opportunity to have so much talent that you trust, that you're able to, you know, pick something from column A, a little from column B, something from column C, and know that you're going to be able to put together a full 9 innings of competitive baseball.
Having a 6-man rotation feels like a fleeting luxury. I mean, I feel like you kind of do that until it stops making sense. You know, I know there's like scheduling and off days and obviously a bunch of X factors that can play a role in that. But it does feel like, okay, if one of these guys starts really flailing out there, or somebody's just pitching past an amount of innings they've pitched in a long time, then you have the option to drop back down to 5. And I don't know, this could be as close as you get to like just riding the hot hand. I mean, I don't think it's a good plan to just throw a guy out there and have him pitch till his arm falls off, you know? So this is about as close as you can get to that without actually doing that, and just kind of using everyone you have at your disposal who is pitching really well until that stops being the case. I mean, piggybacking also has its benefits theoretically. Turnbull as a guy, first time through the order, has a 1.32 ERA this year. Second time through the order, drops down to 0.64. And then third time through the order, blows up to 5.79. So obviously, third time through the order, Turnbull has run into the most trouble he's seen this season. But, you know, those are ERA numbers. When you look at the actual numbers, that just means he's given up 2 earned runs first time through the order, 1 earned run his second time through the order, and 3 earned runs his third time through the order. He just hasn't, you know, pitched deep enough into games that the third time through the order has a more than small sample size. He's only pitched third time through the order for 4 2/3 innings so far this year. But that being said, he is one of the, you know, many pitchers who pitches better the first couple times through the order. And as the day goes on, he becomes sort of a textbook case so far of guys get a read on you, your arm tires, you know, pitches aren't breaking or moving the way you initially intend. It's not as sharp a grip or release or velocity as you started the day with, and guys are just able to read your pitches better and make better contact. But as far as the guys he'd be piggybacking, you have Taiwan Walker, who this year has not, again, thrown that many innings anyway, but already first time through the order is clearly his strong suit. He's been blown up a couple of times in the second and third time through the order, by which I mean the two sets of 3 runs he gave up in 3-run home runs in his first start since coming back. But in his career, He also kind of looks this way. His first time through the order, 3.39 ERA. Second time through the order, 3.90. Third time through the order, 5.23.
Woo!
Again, there are other better statistics to use here, but we're using ERA as shorthand just because it's easier. Guys have a 4.09 slugging percentage against him his third time through the order. But the on-base percentage is pretty much the same across the board, as is batting average. It actually drops to its lowest his third time through the order. So I think with him, it's more like he stays steady. He just gets hit harder, you know, his third time through the order, mm-hmm. which is, you know, not really, it's unideal. That's also not what you want. And then Sanchez, again, same kind of deal. He sort of gives up some runs early, then he settles in. His second time through the order is strongest. He's got a 1.42 ERA this year going through a batting order the second time. His third time through the order, yeah, again, he gets blown up. He's given up 6 earned runs in 5.2 innings his third time through the order. So I think you're just seeing a lot of guys who look like what a starting pitcher looks like right now. Like, the Phillies have 3 guys at the top of their rotation who have put together some really deep starts so far this year. Some really, like, classic previous era pitching starts, the kind of starts that Dave Dombrowski has said he likes from his starting pitchers. And the back of the rotation has effective pitchers in it who fall more into the category of, like, all right, let's get 5. You know, let's see if we get 6 out of this starter. And that's an effective start for the day because, you know, third time through the order, they start getting beat up. So having a guy come in and piggyback seems like it would be a feasible idea or an effective idea, especially when all the guys I'm talking about pitch their strongest early. You know, Sanchez maybe a little later than early in his case for his best innings of the game, but still, these are all guys who seem like they would benefit from a system that works like that. But Liz, why doesn't piggybacking work? Like, there's other factors that go into this than, well, what's your ERA through different times through the order? I mean, I feel like you might be talking about guys' confidence. Maybe somebody doesn't appreciate being like, all right, you're getting half a start and he's getting the other half. I don't know. Like, this if this were as effective as it seems like it could be, more teams would be doing it. This would be a more typically used practice. So I don't know. Is this something the Phillies should jump into?
I think they should try it. I mean, there are some pluses and minuses, but they wanted Turnbull to be, you know, a long man anyway. Like, this is perfect. This is what piggybacking is, essentially what a long man is, except you're not supposed to plan to use him. It's when you're, you know, it's when a starter goes just a few innings. Or it's not always been called piggybacking. Sometimes it's just been called, hey, your fifth starter only goes 4 most of the time. We need another guy.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a new thing. Like, you're calling, like, the opener was genuinely a new thing, but piggybacking is something that's just been done as a thing.
And piggybacking, so I think, is something long that, relief on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Phillies should take advantage of that as long as they can. You know, they should do a 6-man rotation until it stops making sense. I'm going to assume it'll last for just a couple of weeks, maybe, because I think it'll get too much. It'll get too complicated. That tends to be a problem, is keeping track of all of it. Like, everyone is used to 5 days. And if so, eventually everyone is going to want to go back to the original system. But they should take advantage of it as long as they can. And after that, they should mix and match. They're, you know, Sanchez and Turnbull and Walker as much as they're able to, because that's how you're supposed to do all of this.
Thompson also talked about swapping out entire starts for Turnbull or Sanchez, depending on the lineup the Phillies are facing. So if you trust Rob Thompson and his matchups in the batting order, get ready, because that's could be coming to the starting rotation as well. On Tuesday, the Phillies are supposed to face the Blue Jays. This is the first start for which there is not a, you know, listed starter. This is the one people are talking about. So they're going to play Toronto at home once they return from this trip, and they're going to hit, the Blue Jays have hit .225 with a .690 OPS against lefties. That would be Sanchez. And .221 with a .663 OPS against righties. That would be Turnbull. As you can see, there's not a huge difference between those numbers, so how do you make, yeah, you know, that's not a case where I feel like, oh, it's definitely got to be this guy because the numbers lean so heavily in that direction. So I think for this particular start, the one we're talking about, there's not a direct answer if you're looking to play the matchups, I would say, between these two guys. As of now, Sanchez is slated to pitch on Monday as well, so that would seem to make this a Turnbull start, but who knows? The Phillies say they may make an announcement today about their future rotation plans, probably right after this podcast goes live, or maybe even now.
Almost always.
But we'll see who's going to pitch when. Aaron Nola will be pitching tonight as the Phillies begin a four-game set against the San Francisco Giants. Liz, it's time to log back into Apple TV.
Oh, good.
Yes, tonight's game will be featured on the streaming service that's trying to make Friday Night Baseball a thing. Once more, people who tune into the same channels and broadcasts every night to watch the Phillies will have to have it explained to them that no, they can't just do that this time. They need to be signed up and logged into some other streaming service they will probably not have any interest in before or afterward. Liz, what's your general thought on baseball broadcast streaming issues like this? I mean, is this fun seeing a game on Apple TV? Got the analysts in their stand-up studio with no desk, all looking very trendy with like hit probabilities in the corner. Is this how baseball was supposed to be viewed?
No.
What's your take on MLB's advanced talks to make Roku the new home for Sunday morning baseball? My first thought was, what is Sunday morning baseball?
I know. I'd never heard of that. I mean, listen, I have a Roku, so I don't care. But, you know, it's like they want to try and reach people in more places. But just forgetting the fact that they could just, I don't know. I don't know. Like, the issue is the paywall. Do they not get that? The issue is the paywall. This is a product you used to be able to watch for free in your home. But Sunday morning baseball sounds like fun. I could wake up and watch baseball. Sure.
Yeah, sounds like a fun idea. We'll see where it is and if anyone can access it. But in the meantime, whether you can see it or not, the Phillies will be playing the San Francisco Giants this weekend. Liz, the Giants are a team of inconsistent veterans and strong starting pitching. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Yes, that is exactly the formula that won the multiple World Series titles, but that was 10 years ago now. Now they play in a market that's ready for something to go well, with the local NBA team bounced out of the postseason pretty early in Golden State, and the local NFL team not even in practice pads yet, and the other local-ish MLB team making big plans to leave the Bay Area forever. And yet, it's another unthrilling, joyless little 500-ish San Francisco Giants team the Phillies will be playing this weekend. Their offense isn't powerful or reliable or clutch or fast. The most explosive moment it's offered lately is when Jorge Soler broke a bat in frustration over his quadricep. Soler is hitting the ball very hard lately, but there just seems to be always a defender in the way of them. According to Andrew Baggerly of The Athletic, Soler has stepped to the plate with 88 runners on base this season. He's driven in three of them. Liz, what is your off-the-top-of-the-head impression of the San Francisco Giants offense this season?
Snore-inducing. I mean, is that about right? Am I missing something?
No, I mean, that's about the long and short of it with the Giants. Again, this is a formula that Giants fans are probably, if not nostalgic about, but certainly aware of and used to. As far as lineups go, the Phillies will certainly face more formidable ones, but this is a team that was considered a fringe playoff contender. If anything, they're out there with like the Padres in the NL West of teams that have something to prove, but even lesser than the Padres, the Giants, you know, they had a very active offseason that I think got some interest going for how things were actually going to go this year. But how they've gone is, I think, just less exciting than I think people were hoping. And a lot of that actually has to do with the pitching. Now, the pitching actually has been great. They mirror the Phillies in this way, in that they're a team that has struggled at times offensively to get that big hit, but has been able to rely on its pitching. That being said, one of their biggest acquisitions this winter was Blake Snell, who was sort of languishing on free agency for quite some time until the Giants picked him up. We all know Blake Snell at this point pretty well because of all of the fake rumors about him potentially being signed by the Phillies. He is a guy that, you know, he's defending NL Cy Young champion, but he's also got, reputation of a guy who just does not go very late into games and throws a lot of pitches. But that being said, he's probably done the most struggling of any starter in the Giants rotation. When Snell's spot in the rotation has come around this season, the Giants are 0-6. And I say Snell's spot because that spot has only been occupied by Snell three times. When that spot has come around, the Giants have also been outscored 61-14. That is quite the run differential.
Wow. Yes, it is.
I do believe the Phillies will be playing the Giants for four games, but I do believe they will miss that spot. That is the one spot they will not face from the San Francisco Giants, of course. But the Giants have been getting great stuff out of Logan Webb and Keaton Wynn. They have also seen the benefits of signing Jordan Hicks and letting him be a starter, as well as Kyle Harrison. So they have gotten plenty of good starts out of their rotation, except for Snell, who has a groin injury that has him sidelined at the moment, and the Giants' solutions to that problem have thus far not been great. Here's Andrew Baggerly again. With Snell on the injured list because of a groin injury, the Giants filled his spot Wednesday night at Fenway Park by using left-hander Eric Miller as an opener for right-hander Dalton Jeffries. It did not go well. Miller stranded a pair of walks, but Jeffries wasn't so fortunate when he had to play catch-up in counts. The Red Sox treated the Green Monster like a squash court, and the Giants lost 6-2 to fall to 14-17 this season. All in all, Liz, this is a team considered to be, like I said, on the outside of the playoff picture, but with the ability to get inside. They are playing without much of a spark to start the season. And in general, they're another team the Phillies could and should beat. I mean, that's just generally how I've been characterizing Phillies' opponents so far this year. So as they are about to face the Giants for four games, including this upcoming series, Liz, who has the Phillies' toughest opponent really been in 2024?
I think it has it been the Braves, really?
Yeah, they did play the Braves to open the season, so yes. And then again, obviously they will face the Braves again. But yeah, I feel like it has to be the Braves from the opening series where they dropped 2 of 3, and then they played the Reds, and then they kind of like got to play a bunch of bad teams. They played the Reds again, they played the Padres. Now they're going to play the Giants. I mean, they've obviously had a softer schedule to start the season, and that's really benefited them. Do the Giants qualify as part of that soft schedule in your mind?
I think so. The Phillies should really have no problem dominating them. At least, I don't think their rotation will have any problem with the Giants hitters at all. The Phillies hitters, as you know, on the rotation, who knows? Who knows how well they'll do? But I think I don't think they should have a big problem. And I'm like looking at this month right now, this upcoming month, and it's really like they face the Mets, the Rangers, the Giants again, the Rockies again, the Marlins, and that like the Mets might be the toughest team they face.
Well, the Rangers probably.
Oh, yes. Sorry. The Rangers. That's what I meant. The Rangers are probably the toughest team they're going to face. But like this is also it's mostly another cupcake month for them.
Yeah, this is, like you said, you mentioned the Marlins. That's a team you want to play. They just played the Angels, which I forgot to mention. That obviously plays into their soft schedule. So they've really benefited from that. And the Giants being like a couple games under 500 probably are, you know, they're in the same tier as like the Reds, I think, in my mind. They're probably not as good as the Reds, but they're on the same tier. And again, this is a team that I'm not going to go out and say they have no reason not to win every one of these games. Like I said about playing the White Sox, the Rockies, and the Angels. But this is a team the Phillies should beat. You know, there's no reason why the Phillies should definitely have a problem with this Giants team. Obviously, I think you're going to see some starting pitching matchups that really limit the scoring, because as much as the Phillies have been hitting, I think they're going to be facing the kind of rotation that will limit the amount of hard contact they're going to be able to make. And none of the Phillies have ever hit a home run off Jordan Hicks that you're going to see play him tonight. And they're actually very few of them have more than 3 at bats against him. So this is another case of the Phillies having very little exposure to the starter they're going to be facing. Michael Conforto has faced Aaron Nola 48 at bats throughout his career, obviously playing with the Mets before this. 167 hitter against him.
I like it.
But elsewhere, there are some people who have feasted on Aaron Nola in the past. Actually.
Oh, let's hear about them.
Well, the thing is, these are very small, in some cases, sample sizes. You know, The Giants catcher is 1-for-3 against Aaron Nola lifetime. Same with Chapman, their third base, Matt Chapman, their third baseman. But guys like Jesus Flores, their first baseman, and 13 at-bats against Aaron Nola. He has a home run. He has a couple of hits. He's hitting 308 with an 846 OPS.
All right.
Yeah, Jorge Soler is a 313 hitter against Aaron Nola.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike Yastrzemski has gotten him for a home run in the past. And, I mean, again, this is in 7 at-bats, but he has a 1,500 OPS.
Nah.
Aaron Nola. So even in what little some of the Giants have seen Aaron Nola, they've been able to make some contact that I think we would call
some
unpleasant. So, you know, perhaps that is something to take into account as the Phillies take on the Giants tonight. But, yeah, this is a team that the Phillies should be able to, you know, there's no reason to think they are going to run into a wall here. The Giants are having their own struggles and things are not, you know, going super well for them out in San Francisco. So I think coming into Citizens Bank Park this weekend, they should be able to take care of business once again. Tonight, you'll get Jordan Hicks and Aaron Nola. You get Keaton Wynn and Ranger Suarez in Game 2, Logan Webb and Taiwan Walker in Game 3, and the Giants have yet to name a starter for Game 4. Whoever it is will face off against Christopher Sanchez. How are you feeling about this series, Liz? Do you think any of these particular Phillies hitters are going to go off? Is anybody due to really open up here?
I think Bryce Harper, because if no one you mentioned earlier, I was hitting like 230. He looked like he wanted to be anywhere but where he was this week. Mm. If you didn't look at his face and see a guy who's like, where is my new kid? Why am I not seeing my new kid right now? He joined this road trip after the birth of his third child. So I'm just going to say he probably wants to be home right now. I mean, I think he wanted to be home the whole road trip. He was distracted, and no one should blame him. Like, what? He had 3 days of maternity leave and took every single minute of it, as he should have. He should have had longer. Everyone is upset because he, you know, the Phillies didn't necessarily do great while he was gone, or, you know, whatever it was. But he should have stayed longer. The poor guy. I felt terrible for him on this road trip. Now that he is home, I think he'll do a lot better.
So ESPN published a story about Harper just today, and it's kind of exactly what they were writing. I feel like you might get one of these stories a year, and it's just about Bryce Harper and his bond with Philadelphia.
Oh.
And it just kind of seems, I don't know, the timing seems strange. I mean, it's not like this is unwelcome. You know, you read one of these stories, it's whatever, you know. But we've heard this before. They talked to John Kruk, Bryson Stott, Chase Utley, you know, Phillies coaches, just about Harper and what he's able to do and what he says about the city and everything. And, you know, at this point, you know, okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. It just, like, feels like the kind of thing that gets published when a guy is on an absolute heater. And Harper's not really doing that yet. Again, though, I feel like this is not a guy you got to worry about in those respects. And I said that before when he was struggling. You know, this is a guy who's going to just figure it out on his own. And like you said, he's probably got other things on his mind right now. And the team has been winning despite some of his numbers being lower than, you know, you want him to be or expect him to be. He doesn't have to be this, like, attack dog pulling on the chain at every moment. And in fact, that's unsustainable. So, you know, it's okay for him to be on the back burner of the Phillies offense while the rest of the offense is really, you know, making some hay. Obviously, you saw Brandon Marsh have a great beginning of the season, and he's tapered off a bit since, but he was able to contribute early on. Alec Bohm has obviously looked unstoppable. Looked like Bryson Stott was waking up a couple of days ago. I think he's making some more hard contact now. And in Harper's case, too, honestly, I feel like I've seen a lot of games where he is just, like, flying out to the warning track.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that lately.
Yeah. Lining out to, like, the ball gets tracked down to the gap. And, hey, I'm going to throw Johan Rojas out there, too, because his offense is obviously, I think we can say at this point, turned a corner. Like,
I hope so.
Fair to say about Rojas?
Yeah. I mean, I it's been a month. I'd like to see more. I'd like to see him sustain this over a longer period. But, you know, it's been good results so far.
Yeah. So that's the kind of beauty of this lineup, is it's supposed to be deep enough that Harper can hit 230 for a little while and it's okay. You know, that's not going to ruin your season. And yeah, that's what I think. I think you're right though, too. I think Harper is a good guess until he really goes ham. I think he is a good guess for like a breakout candidate for any series. I actually thought against the White Sox, which feels like forever ago at this point,
that
he was absolutely going to go nuts. Didn't quite happen, but you know, again, he has still been very present, if not the MVP of the Phillies lineup. And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't register as a problem for me. Certainly not yet. So we'll see what happens. I'm with you. Let's just both say we think Bryce Harper is going to use these four games against the Giants to really start hammering the ball. Could be tough because the Giants have a their biggest strength is their rotation, but we will see. Right now, the Phillies, according to Baseball Reference, have a 92% chance of making the postseason and a 5.9% chance to win the World Series. I'll just throw that in there as well.
It's May 3rd. I'm not thinking World Series right now. No, no.
Well, the Phillies are, so if they're willing to think that far ahead, then so am I.
All right.
Liz, you got any final thoughts before we wrap up the show today?
I felt like I did have one, but now I can't remember it. So go Phils. Everyone enjoyed the weekend. I think the weather is supposed to be kind of crappy. So
yeah, if you're headed out to the game, maybe bring a sweatshirt, hoodie, rain
umbrella.
Jacket. You know, just prepare yourself because today is beautiful, but not looking like a lot of great baseball weather this weekend. So prepare yourself and don't forget to nurse those wounds about the Sixers however you need to. Ugh. Obviously, we're all used to these sorts of outcomes, but that doesn't make them any more fun. And the Phillies are here for quite some time still as a form of therapy to all those who are hurting. So welcome. The Phillies are good. It's fun. I'm not being sarcastic when I say that. Hop on in. It is a good way to kind of feel better after another early Sixers playoff exit. So that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. For new episodes, head on over to billypenn.com/hittin'season. We'll do 3 new episodes every week. And if you want even more content, head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. From WHYY and Billy Penn, I'm Justin Clue.
I'm Liz Rocher.
And this has been Hittin' Season.